Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, doesn't that bring back powerful memories for so many of us? The theme tune for the Gay Byrne radio show, which ran from 1973 to 1998 here on RTÉ Radio 1. And 2 years ago, Gay's daughter Susie put together a book called Dear Gay, which comprised many of the heartfelt letters sent to Gay's radio show over the years. And that book was such a huge success. And so Susie has gone back to the archives again and put together another compilation of the letters and calls to Gay that provided the soundtrack to so many of our lives in the years that Gay was on air here at RTÉ Radio 1. The new book is called P.S. Gay, and Susie is here with me now. Hello, Susie.
Hi, Claire. Thank you for having me on.
Very welcome. Delighted to have you here. Now, this second book, it's fair to say, almost didn't happen because you had a lot of work done. But then, of course, you lost Kathleen, your mum.
Yes.
And that put a stop to the project, if you like. And I'd say it was difficult to get back to it, was it?
It was difficult. It's a year ago next Friday that mum died. So we'd done a huge amount of work, myself and Alice O'Sullivan, in the run-up to mum's death. And it felt at the time when she died, I just couldn't do it. I actually couldn't go near it again. A few months later, Alice persuaded me to go back in.
Now,
and
this
do
is
it.
Alice, who
Alice
was,
O'Sullivan, sorry,
who worked with
who
Gay
worked
here
with Gay in on the Gay Byrne show for many, many years, and who worked with me. Both of us did the research together for the compiling of P.S. Gay. So, but we decided to go in last February to go back and finish it because a lot of the research that I had done. Mum had been at home in Sandymount and I'd been coming down from RTÉ to her with funny stories of things that we'd found, her own writing over in various requests to Dad to say requests on the radio, etc. And she was so excited about the book. So it kind of felt like a bit of a tribute to her to finish it, and also a tribute to all the women who listened and were part of the story of PSK.
But you know, when I was reading the book, having lost my own dad a number of years ago, I thought this must be really difficult for Susie because you're looking at his handwriting and your mother's handwriting in those notes that she would send in with him, and you're listening to his voice when you're going through the archive as well. It's, I'd say, it was personally a challenging thing to do.
I found it very difficult, to be honest, in parts. I found it, well, grief, as everyone knows, is a very lonely place. So you're sometimes just taken off into moments, and their writing, particularly Dad's voice, very much so, but a lot of it's upbeat and it's kind of almost of its time. Mm-hmm. Whereas Mum's writing and Dad's writing, which are all over the files. It's funny because they were so together and stuff, and she was so involved in our lives and his life. But yes, it was quite emotional at times. It depends on the day, you know yourself.
But it's a lovely tribute, and it's a lovely thing to do for their memory as well.
Incredible. And it's such a privilege. I mean, I don't know anybody else that has had the privilege of going in and really understanding their own parents, where they've come from and the jobs that they did. And I, as a teenager and growing up, Gay Byrne, Late Show was part of our lives, but we were mortified a lot of the time by it. You know, they're talking about sex, about the church, about things. And
you didn't want to know what Dad is doing.
Yeah, I didn't want to know about it. Whereas as an adult, go back in, it really was an incredible privilege to now understand why everybody loved him and the show and the work that went into it and everything. So really, it was upsetting at times, but emotionally a privilege, I think, all in all. So you kind of, as they would say themselves, the show must go on.
It's astonishing to see how people wrote to Gay. Like when I was reading the letters, I felt this person has probably never said these words out loud to another single human being before.
Yes, yeah. And they really did. And I think they also wrote spontaneously. A lot of the letters, even the pieces of paper, they just sat down at their kitchen tables there and then and wrote and posted these letters, often at personal risk to themselves. And I think that's the beauty of it all, that it's there, that feeling of the community. There were so many people listening, and they were all over the country, and there was a feeling that other people had things going on in their lives that were mirroring their own lives. Mm-hmm. So they just sat down, poured out their hearts, but they really felt they were talking to him. They really weren't talking to anybody else. And I think they really felt that he was listening, and that nothing was too small or too petty or too big that they could just share. And there's a lot of sadness and a lot of hardship, but there's so much fun and the humour and the backbone of these mostly women, not exclusively women, but mostly women, and what they contributed to art, the change. I mean, he always said he was a conduit for change, but really, I think when you go into the archives and you see these letters and comments, the phone comments, and they were part of the show, and yeah, they felt part of the show.
And you tell us a bit more as well about the team and how it all worked and what Gay's rituals were. That's, you know, we get to see the machinery behind the Gay Byrne show in the book as well, which is really fascinating to see.
It's the other side of the show than the letters. And he was meticulous, and he expected absolute perfection from his team, and he gave it back, but he expected it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that really comes across in the daily files that are these brown manila files, which contain a treasure trove of the day and the date that it is, and all of the letters, scraps of paper, the running order, his notes, his research notes, the interview notes, and the preparation that went into every single programme. And when I was speaking to the team, the Gay Byrne Show team, over the course of the two books, one of the fascinating things that I didn't know about him was that, he left our house at pretty much 2 minutes past seven, not 5 past seven, but 2 minutes past seven every morning. And he went into studio and sat in the studio with a dead mic and rehearsed everything. So all the letters that were going to be read out, he read the newspapers. As Joe Duffy said, you barely got a hello out of him. Nobody went near him, including the producer. Mm-hmm. Once he was in the studio, he was rehearsing.
But that's why he made it look so easy, because he put all of the work in.
Exactly.
There's a lot about Joe Duffy, which I was delighted to see as well, because he was an integral part of the programme, the reporter on the show. It brought a new dimension to that programme, really, didn't it, having
Joe
there?
Absolutely. And Joe and Dad had an incredible relationship, and they both had that banter, kind of dry sense of humour. And when myself and Alice were researching, we used to call the bit about Joe the birth of Joe Duffy. He doesn't realise that, but that's what we called it.
And he does now.
But so Joe came along to the programme, I think initially as a producer, and then he went out presenting. And Dad was tied to Dublin with the producing The Late Late Show on Friday. So the arrival of Joe Duffy in also the mobile phone and the ability of them to take an outside broadcast unit around the country just changed the whole dimension of the programme and allowed them to do that.
Well, we have a clip of Joe in action. This is from 1999. Joe reporting, wait till you hear this, live from a jacuzzi with 12 singers from the Italian Cultural Institute.
I've never been in a jacuzzi before. You've heard of the floozy in the jacuzzi. Yeah, well, indeed. I'm the fool in the pool. The lunger in the plunger, or as they said to me in Swords on Monday, you're a bowsy in a jacuzzi.
Well, no.
And the other important thing, I'm in the middle here, it's absolutely glorious. Now, you said to me this morning, Joe, as we know, you all have your personalised jacuzzi at home and one there in the corner of the studio.
That's right.
You said to me, Joe, when you get into the jacuzzi, it will be your first time. Make sure you position yourself correctly.
Yes.
So, Gay, I'm going to slip in here now.
Yes.
And will you tell me
slip
which way to move to get the full sensation that's necessary?
Well, first of all, you have to get into the middle of the jacuzzi, Joe.
Right,
and
I'm moving down, yeah.
Yes. You
be careful of the mic now.
Leave your bucket and spade on the side.
If he took the flippers off, Gay, it'd be much better.
And then you have to be very, very careful to sit on your bum, Joe, in the middle.
Indeed. I'm there now. Yeah. Yes. Where do I move to, left or right?
You don't move at all. You just sit on your little bum and you stretch your legs wide apart.
Oh, mammy.
As you sit. Oh, mammy. And then you bring your arms up in the position of a bird in flight.
Yeah. I'm doing that right now. Gay, okay. The other thing as well is this is the people's program. This is popular culture.
What a double act. Weren't they great?
They really were. They really were. They were so funny. And Joe did... His background was different to Dad, so he brought the programme to... He went to Mountjoy and Arbor Hill prisons, and there's a beautiful letter in the book from a prisoner who found that the report was
amazing.
Saw that,
who felt really respected,
yeah,
you know, by that.
Yeah, and they went to... Jacob's Biscuit Factory, and Joe is credited with bringing back the Chocolate Kimberley, and they did a huge big protest outside Switzer's to bring back the gnomes into the Switzer's windows.
Well, that's really interesting,
stuff. Yeah.
Because what I love about the Gay Byrne show, and you learn this from the book, mm-hmm. is that rather than the big news stories of the day, they followed where the audience wanted to go, where
Absolutely.
The listeners wanted to go. So mm-hmm. people want to talk about the gnomes missing from the window display at Switzer's. That's what Gay and the programme would do.
Absolutely, because we were looking at the time, we were looking for information because Mary Robinson had just been elected president in 1990, and we were in the November files, and we were looking, and there was bits about that, but really the gnomes in Switzer's windows at
the
end of November,
that's what people wanted to talk about.
It took off.
Unsurprisingly, we're getting mm-hmm. messages in. Anytime my mum was annoyed with something, she'd always say, "That's it, I'm writing to Gay." And of course she never would, but it became a running joke in the house. However, she did eventually write to him asking him to wish her mum a happy 80th birthday, which he very kindly did. It made her so happy. Another one, I am in Spain. I'm in my 60s. When I heard of Gay's death a few years ago, it made me cry because he was Ireland to me in my youth. I always remember climbing into bed with my mum and listening to the Sig tune and listening to his voice. He is sadly missed. I'm sure so many people say that to you about the Sig tune.
It unbelievable.
Meant you were off sick from school.
Yes. And I think the Sig tune is so incredible because I don't think there's a person in the country that whether you're my age, younger or older, the minute that tune comes on, everybody just is transported back to something in their lives at that point.
Yes,
absolutely.
Part of our day. Well, Liz, when we take a listen to Gay reading one of the letters that you mention in the book, this is from a 55-year-old man who's been married for over 20 years, and he's talking here about his unconsummated marriage.
After about 7 years of marriage, I talked her into going to see someone. The psychiatrist told us that it was not that uncommon in Ireland, and that the major factor was harsh moral upbringing in the younger years. My wife told him that she'd always been portrayed as something, that sex had always been portrayed as something vulgar and vile, and not to be indulged in by the manners of the day. Although she was able eventually to get over her repulsion and fear of sex, she remained unable to have physical relations. I think her greatest pain was that she was not able to have children of our own. We did adopt children, and she's been the best mother in the world to them. They are almost healthy adults by now. Sometimes when I realise the damage that was done to my wife in her youth, I do become disturbed by it. She is the most caring and loving woman in the world, and I wouldn't think of leaving her in a millennium. I must say we're both very careful about the upbringing of our children. We taught them that a loving sexual expression is healthy, wholesome and beautiful. Perhaps it's time we started thinking, talking and teaching about loving sex in this country, which it would seem is not necessarily always the same as legal sex. The pain the wife's condition has caused both of us can never be uttered. It's beyond measure. I have watched her grief, unable to help her. You may well ask if I have ever been unfaithful to her. The answer is sometimes, but as far as I'm concerned, that's a non-issue. I've also been celibate for long, long periods in my life, as has been my wife all her life. I think as a nation, we all have a lot of rethinking to do on the question of what sexual attitudes we give to our young people. I hope you read out this letter so that maybe the extent of this problem may surface. Harsh moral upbringing was the dominating factor in all our youths, and yet the extent of the damage remains unknown.
I'm just looking at the date on that, Susie. That was 26 years ago.
Yeah.
And you could argue, I suppose, that we were getting a little more modern mm-hmm. in our viewpoint then. But really, when you go back even further, the team and Gay, they weren't afraid of taking on any of these subjects, which were very much taboo in the Ireland of the time, weren't they?
Yeah, incredible. They really weren't. And I think they were getting so many of them. And I think that letter is amazing. Well, first of all, it was written by a man, which was not unusual, but not usual as such in the programme, and beautifully written. I think he's how he's described the power of negativity, I guess, that the fact that they never had any children of their own for that reason. Mm-hmm. Just and then the psychiatrist saying that this was very common. It beggars belief that was only 26 years ago. It feels like it should have been 126 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the letters are written so well. That's what struck me about them. You've got letters in there from women who are stay-at-home mothers.
Yeah.
And they have difficulty with that. And they're so well written. And then you have letters from women who go out to work.
Yes.
And how difficult they find that.
Yeah.
But again, it's that one-on-one relationship that they feel they have with Gay, which is just so special. Yeah. There's something magical about it.
And they're so emotionally attached. And they, you know, even when Dad died and the book of condolences in from RIP, just going through that even the outpouring there, it was like, we kind of feel like we've lost a member of our family that we never actually met. Mm-hmm. And that's there again and again and again. Sorry. And I do think that brutal honesty of people is what's probably one of the most incredible things that come across again in the archives. It's there. I mean, we've just taken a snapshot of what's there.
Really?
There's so much there that we, you know, that they received hundreds of letters, and something like that, which would have been read out, would have been picked from a group of other letters.
That were similar, maybe.
That were similar, and that would give people that feeling that you're not alone, and the reaction to that letter then would have created more and more. So it was very, what the team did and what they were, how they were able to put together a programme of that calibre, because they were a small team.
And we've kept all of these letters. They're all here.
They're all here.
So you physically went in and went through these boxes with Alice to find them.
And the RTE archives, their support was, we couldn't have done it without them. They were just phenomenal. But what they have is incredible, because it'll never happen again. You'll never get the letters. And it's just even the torn out pieces of paper, the notes, all of those things that are physically there, that people didn't have email, people didn't have anything. So whatever they wrote from the heart. Mm-hmm. And you can see it in torn out pieces of like foolscap pages that they obviously had a moment to write. Maybe it was when they felt safe enough to write, scribbled it down. But like you say, they were so well educated, really. And the ability to write and beautiful letters.
Gorgeous letters.
In a snapshot to explain so much.
And it's important that you're doing this. I mean, it really is a social record that we have now. Yeah. As the first book was, were you surprised at the reaction to Dear
Hugely.
Gay?
Yeah, really. The reaction was phenomenal, and I think because, again, it's not history in the formal sense of it. It's history to the people who wrote letters and who were everywhere. They weren't just in Dublin or Cork; they were all over the country, and they were all kind of going through the same kind of thing. And yet, you know, when you PSK being the other side of Dear Gay, the humour and the resilience and the backbone that these predominantly women gave to us all, I suppose, they were our mothers, really. And I just think that it's a great reflection of people who were upbeat and strong and full of fun and laughter, even in the face of not so great times.
Well, Susie, it's been lovely to have you
here.
Thank you,
Claire.
And PSK is out now in all good bookshops. And Gay was so supportive to me as well in my early years in this in this business, which I'm always grateful for. All right, we will take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.